You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
What's going on? It's the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown, MyAggieNation.com. Over there, the man, the myth, the legend, President Zachary Taylor. But as always, way more important than that is the guy that we have on the phone line right now. And that is one David Oven of The Athletic, the new hotness in sports journalism, The Athletic. David, what's going on?
Not too much. I'm enjoying this morning when my wife left for work. It was 67 degrees here in Tennessee.
Just don't rub it in.
I gotta say, it's in those moments that I don't miss Texas too much.
Oh, don't rub it in. I just did a bike ride, and I think it's, let's see, what my watch says, 92. It's only 92. A cold front has come through.
Yeah, things have cooled down here a little bit, and everybody was excited because yesterday was, 97?
Yeah.
I think, and it didn't reach triple digits, so everybody's pretty happy about
that. You used to be up in Dallas, and there was like a streak of like no less than 107 for like a week there while we were at SEC Media Day, so I'm not jealous about that either.
Yeah, that's. I think it was the summer of 2012. They had 40 consecutive days or something like that.
Yeah,
triple digit temperatures.
Oh, it was miserable.
I don't miss it. I'll say that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, David is up there in Knoxville, in Tennessee, covering the Vols now. He used to be down at Dave Campbell's Texas Football, and he did a really extensive cover feature for their summer magazine on Jimbo Fisher. First, though, David, you were up at SEC Media Days, or I guess over at SEC Media Days. With us in Atlanta, first time in Atlanta. Did you go to SEC Media Days in Birmingham ever?
No, that was my first time down there. So other than somebody getting me sick, it was a good few days.
We're just gonna, but
not too bad.
You sat next to Ben Baby all week. We'll just blame it on him.
That sounds good. Let's chalk it up to that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what was your impressions of SEC Media? I know you were a big Big 12 guy, as I was before this, and got to do those. What's your impressions of just the spectacle first off, and then kind of what you heard?
Yeah, I mean, they've sort of embraced the spectacle. You know, the having fans roll up is obviously something that sort of separates the SEC, and they embraced that with the Fan Fest sort of the day before on Sunday, and sort of, you know, they had crowd control for fans. You don't really see a lot of fans at that Big 12. They bring the mascots who manage to be endlessly obnoxious. And I think with the, you know, at the Big 12, you only have about 500 some reporters. They credential, you know, just about everybody and their mom at the SEC. So you have like 1,000 some reporters there. So it's hard to really get a lot of meaningful face time. But you look hard enough, you can find some stuff to get done. So it's been it was an interesting experience.
I'm going to deviate real quick from the line of questioning here, because you mentioned the Big 12 mascots, and I have this theory that actually, the creepiest mascot in all of college football is Willie the Wildcat, because why the man-arms? Why the man-arms?
Yeah, so it's very true. So I actually have beef with Willie the Wildcat. So somebody asked, somebody was asking me to rank the mascots, and I ranked Willie as the creepiest, because I called him a genetic experiment gone wrong. I would say that's an accurate summation of Willie the Wildcat. So I came to Big 12 Media Day, this was probably 6 or 7 years ago, and Willie confronts me, hands me a piece of paper that just says "genetic experiment gone wrong" with a question mark. I said, "Sorry, man. Listen, the truth hurts, my guy. The truth hurts."
That's amazing.
But yeah, Willie, definitely. I don't know why the human arms. I mean, there's a dark origin story there that's left untold, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's like a young Kansas State football player like happened upon some old crone witch, and she cursed a spell on him, and
Secret Project
Emo. Secret Project is probably mixed in there.
Yeah.
There's about some purple sludge. There's a number of origin stories that I'm not sure we ever want to hear.
Now, another difference that I've noticed with Big 12 Media Days, obviously there's fewer teams in the Big 12. Things take a little less time with it only being 2 days. With SEC Media Days, I mean, they drag out. And I know you guys are working hard. And by the end, you're ready to head home. What as far as the differences in that, kind of the pomp and circumstance around it as well with the players and the coaches. What differences did you see there?
Yeah, they gotta go 3 days. The SEC 4 is just brutal. You could go 5-5-4 and be done with the SEC. But man, the 4 days, it is even though two of them are really just half days, it's brutal. So Yeah, I would like to see 3 days. Conversely, the Big 12 I always thought was a little short. The 2 days always feels kind of abrupt, especially like the second they finish day two, everyone's tearing down the whole set and everything's being torn down. But yeah, I think, you know, sort of like I said before, the you know, the biggest difference is just there's a lot more sort of free time where you can sort of you know, get some face time with people at the Big 12. A lot more opportunity with that. But the SEC is so regimented. I mean, the teams come in, they'll fly in, and then 4 hours later they're gone. It's very quick, and every second is sort of accounted for. There's not a lot of time to just sort of hang out and be versus the Big 12, where they're pretty much there for the entire day. So a little bit more difficult in the SEC to get some productive work done.
Yeah, not very many anecdotes you're getting from players or coaches in the SEC. what are the biggest storylines that you pulled out of SEC Media Days?
I mean, certainly everybody wants to talk about the Alabama quarterbacks, and when Nick Saban can't definitively say that the Jalen Hurts is going to come back. I mean, Jalen went and told him that yesterday, or I guess a couple of days after that. So it sounds like he'll be there, but certainly Alabama has one of the most fascinating quarterback competitions that we've ever seen. A guy who's, you know, taken the program to two national championship games, versus the guy who's only played a half of football, but won them the national championship game. I mean, that's an awkward situation. So certainly that, and then obviously all the new faces around the league. Everyone is sort of coming from a different perspective. When you look at, you know, Chad Morris and Jimbo Fisher and Jeremy Pruitt, and then obviously Dan Mullen going back to Florida, where he helped Urban Meyer, you know, develop a winning program there. Every new coach, or six of them in the league, has sort of a very unique situation and expectations that come with that. So that, I think, is pretty interesting. You know, almost half the league is in a new spot or welcoming a new coach.
Yeah, speaking of, how about Chad Morris, who was, you know, as he became to known through this kind of coaching search and last season at A&M, Aggie Chad, for his being a former student here at A&M, never playing with the football team, but going to school here, then rising up through the coaching ranks. He got asked a couple times point blank about his alma mater, and he sidestepped that a few times.
Yeah, I mean, I think he doesn't want to deal with that. I think he's got enough on his plate at Arkansas and a tough enough task ahead of him he doesn't have to worry about A&M. I think he knows they're going to be playing, and I'm sure there'll be plenty written about his time at A&M when that day comes. But yeah, I sense that Chad knows that the task ahead of him is, I wouldn't say it's quite as difficult at SMU dire as the situation that he inherited at SMU, but the task ahead of getting Arkansas from 4-18 to, you know, I'm from Arkansas, I know the expectations there. They want to compete for the West every now and then. Doing that, I think, is much more difficult than what he had to deal with at SMU.
Another note about even a lot of those new head coaches is that many of them, of course, were under Nick Saban, and then you have guys like Will Muschamp, who was also an assistant under Saban for a long time. It just seems like that coaching tree, and you also, I think, start to pick up from other teams, too, that they're saying, well, if we want to be like Bama, we have to get guys who have worked with Nick Saban. Is that kind of what you've gotten from that?
Yeah, I mean, I've studied this sort of dynamic, and I think Kirby Smart's success at Georgia, I think, breathes new life into it. But over and over again, we've seen, you know, Nick Saban is still 12-0 against his former assistant. I don't know, we've seen so many times, especially SEC East, program after program try to mine the Saban tree for the next Saban. And over again, we've seen that there's only one Nick Saban, and ultimately, he's the guy that's responsible for his program. So, you know, we'll see. I think Tennessee has the advantage of, they're not trying to necessarily beat Nick Saban yet. They're trying to field a sustainable, consistent program, which has been a problem over the last decade. You know, so I don't think they're at Tennessee, I don't think their eye is clearly or is quite as clearly aimed at, we got to knock out Nick Saban. They just want a winner, and that's what they're trying to do with Jeremy Pruitt. But I think, you know, the Saban tree, if Jeremy Pruitt succeeds, you're going to see another decade of this, I think. Kirby Smart felt like the tail end of it, with people figuring out, you know, you don't beat Nick Saban at his own game. You know, you got to do something else to beat Nick Saban. A&M has tapped into that a little bit. But we'll see. I mean, I think Pruitt, again, if he doesn't succeed, I think you'll see it still sort of taper off a little bit, and people recognize that Georgia is a place that, you know, had a lot of talent and was a special place. If Jeremy Pruitt does it, I mean, this is good news for the bank accounts of everyone that Nick Saban has ever coached with.
Well, another one of those Saban coaching assistants is a guy that you sat down with for a while over the summer to do a cover feature on for Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. That's A&M's Jimbo Fisher. What was your initial takes from what you learned from Jimbo, got to talk to Jimbo, and kind of your projections for what he'll do here?
I think he's definitely taking note of that A&M is a very different place. Anybody who's associated with A&M or has been around A&M or has seen A&M before, you can tell it's just a little bit different in a lot of different ways. I think you feel that a little bit, seeing that, some of the traditions, the passions, the sort of intensity that is unique to A&M. And I think he's, you know, there's a steep learning curve. I talked to Jackie Sherrill and R.C. Slocum, and they basically said, Jackie Sherrill said, it took me, I think he said, 3.5 years before I really understood A&M, that I really got it. And I don't think you can win until you do that, until you people around A&M can kind of smell that on you, like, oh, you understand us now. And so Jimbo's got to do a little bit of that. The roster is in decent shape. I don't think he's going to be the guy that's going to, you know, I'm skeptical he's going to win a national championship there, but I think he will win more consistently and have a more stable program that I think Kevin Sumlin was able to.
And obviously, I don't know if you brought this up with Jimbo at all, but, you know, the fact that A&M was able to pull in a guy who's won a national championship from a program like Florida State came as a shock to a lot of folks. You know, from Jimbo's perspective, as you mentioned, he's still kind of getting the lay of the land, and obviously I think the money was a big reason, was probably the biggest reason why he came to A&M. But just kind of a shocking hire, I guess, all things together. On paper, it just doesn't make sense, if that makes sense.
Well, I think actually the money is really not that big of a reason. I think when you look at it, when we talk about annual salary, you know, he did jump only from number 6 to number 3. I think going from making $5.7 million to $7.5 is not a life-changing situation. The 10-year guarantee is unprecedented. But I found that the money was more a symbol more than anything. The bottom line was at Florida State, he was able to win there. He really, you know, liked the people there. He wasn't looking to leave. But ultimately, when it came to facilities, when it came to just, you know, assistant salary, when it came to everything, he didn't feel like everyone was always pulling the rope in the same direction. It was kind of he was constantly running into friction. His you know, the university president, his AD, they didn't always get along. They weren't always rowing in the same direction. They didn't always have shared priorities. And I think A&M came along at a perfect time. And A&M, that's not going to be a problem. That is a hungry university that wants a winner really badly. And whatever he wants, he can snap, and he's going to get it at A&M. And I think that was really attractive to him. And the salary thing, the contract thing, that's more of just an expression of, hey, we're serious about this. We are Texas A&M. We want to win. This is how badly we want to win. Whatever you need here, you're going to get that. And I think when you boil down why he made a sort of unprecedented jump, that's the biggest reason why. Is he knows whatever he needs, he's going to get there, and A&M is going to provide him with everything that he wants and everything that he needs to just get them where they want to go.
I got two more questions, and we'll close you out here. First is the infamous question. Do you think with the roster they have now, what do you think that he wins? He's successful in his first season, and what do you think that first season looks like?
I mean, it'll be a transition. I think 8 or 9 wins is probably about right for year one. The first month of the season is absolutely brutal. I don't think they're going to be able to steal one from Clemson or Alabama. You look closely at this season and at teams around the country, and if you try to come up with somebody besides Clemson or Alabama as your national champion, it's tough. They are the class of college football, two really elite teams, and they're going to be tested in the first month. So, you know, I don't think they're going to win either of those, but, you know, 8 or 9 wins with a win in a mid-level bowl game, I think is about right for year one for Jimbo.
And then secondly, correct me if I'm wrong, but was your story in Dave Campbell's the one that delved into Jimbo's thoughts on redecorating the coach's office?
Yeah, I think people put a lot more, I guess, connotation in that than there was there. Ultimately, you know, people were asking, you know, oh, is he taking a shot at someone? Is he already complaining about AM facilities? Like, no, he just wanted to put his own spin and work in a environment that's comfortable. I mean, if you are going to pay a guy $75 million, you're going to renovate his office too, but he obviously had a lot of other things that were on his plate before that happened. But yeah, I don't think that was he would take a shot at anything. It's just he's doing his work, and ultimately his full stamp is not on the A&M program just yet. And I think that's what I wanted to accomplish in sort of writing about, you know, his surroundings are a little bit different than he would like right now. And I think that's true in his office. I think it's true on the roster. I think it's true everywhere. A&M, he wants it to look very, very different by the time he's done with it than it looks right now.
Yeah, and you've been through a lot of coaches' office, and when I was in there talking with him a few months ago, it is a little weird to be in the A&M coaches' office and see a bunch of Florida State helmets around. He still has plenty of Florida State gear. I guess if you win a national championship, you'll hang on to those memories.
Yeah, I think so. But, he's going to do everything that he wants, and that's going to be a program that's sort of crafted in his image over the next few years, for better or worse.
Definitely, definitely. Well, that is David Oben of The Athletic. What's your Twitter? How can people reach you? How can people complain about the things that you write? Because that's what everyone loves to do.
Yeah, at David Oben, UBBEN. I like to think I respond to people with some regularity. I try to keep the bickering on Twitter today to a minimum, which is to say almost none. I do appreciate it. Some good old fashioned ribbing from time to time.
He is he's a must follow on Twitter. He has some great insights and a good one liner or two every now and then on the Twitter. So that's David Oben of The Athletic. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll be back with a little bit more right after this.
The My Aggie Nation podcast continues to roll on this Wednesday. It's the post-SEC Media Days wrap-up. Of course, Travis was at SEC Media Days in Hotlanta last week. I was going to ask you, anything fun outside of the Media Days?
Yeah, well, there was a couple of receptions, one at the College Football Hall of Fame, which was, I mean, the writer's room of the Media Days was at the College Football Hall of Fame, and that in itself is a pretty cool ordeal. There's all kinds of fun stuff and artifacts and exhibits and things to look at. So that was pretty cool.
So the car wash wasn't all in one place?
No. Yes and no. So in Atlanta, it's all in that entertainment district that has, you know, CNN and the aquarium and World of Coke and the Centennial Park and all of that downtown. So there's on one block, there's the CNN facility. And as actually a part of the CNN facility, and then via a skywalk, the Omni Hotel is connected to the CNN.
Oh.
So that was the hotel we stayed at, and there is actually on the second floor is where the electronic media and TV was, and then some of the SEC network and, you know, all those little rooms were there. And then if you go across the skywalk and down some stairs and then around a corner, that's the College Football Hall of Fame. So it was all kind of one big connected building that you had to kind of go through a few skywalks to get to stuff.
Just because in the past in Birmingham, it's been in one hotel, and it was literally three different conference rooms that were right next to each other. You just had to cross the hall.
I tell you, from having been there and done Radio Row in Birmingham, they actually had Radio Row just in one of the ballroom conference rooms, and it was so loud in there.
I'll bet.
Because in Birmingham, it's in kind of a hallway that leads into the mall that the hotel's attached to, and so it kind of disperses some of the noise of all kinds of people talking at all times, and this was just sound reverberating throughout. So
that sounds like fun.
It was, you'd probably have a pretty good headache by the time that you got off the air in there. But other than that, it was nice. I actually liked the setup. I liked it better than Birmingham. It was a little bit more streamlined, and there was a lot more pomp and circumstance. It wasn't just a coach kind of coming through the lobby of a hotel. They actually had a blue carpet that led through the entryway of the College Football Hall of Fame into the kind of fake field room that we had all the writers in. And so when the coaches and players arrived, they went down this blue carpet, and all the fans were each side of the blue carpet where you could get autographs and stuff like that. And so it was a little bit more of a spectacle. It was great. It was fun. Outside of that, there was a reception at the College Football Hall of Fame one of the nights that was pretty fun, pretty good food. And then the second night was actually probably the coolest. The city of Atlanta put on a reception that was actually at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the new stadium. So we took a bus over there. We went down to their Delta Club, which is kind of their sideline club. I think it's like the Miller Lite Club or something, if you want to compare it to AT&T Stadium. But we were down there, got food, got to watch the All-Star game down there, and then they just had the field open that you could go walk around on the field. It was actually set up for an Atlanta United game, their MLS team, who, by the way, draws an incredible amount of fans.
Oh,
I mean, they're
crazy. Did
you get
to see a game?
We didn't, but I don't want to say complete falsities, but we can maybe look this up. But they played on Sunday before we arrived, on the day we arrived, and apparently it's 72,000.
Really?
For the MLS soccer game. So they are it was against Seattle, but they are all about their soccer team there that plays at the stadium. Anyway, so that was pretty cool. We got to walk around the stadium and see what was going on there. And here's the deal. It's right now it draws some of the biggest comparisons, and there's kind of a competition between Mercedes-Benz and AT&T as kind of the two newest, coolest stadiums.
And up in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, in Minnesota. But you kind of don't hear a lot of the conversations about the one in Minnesota per se. Like, for instance, talking about the World Cup in 2026 that's coming here, a lot of talks that there might be a competition between Atlanta and Dallas for the finals. And, man, give me AT&T every day of the week.
Yeah?
Because Mercedes looks cool on the outside. The roof is cool, the architecture they did with that, and the halo screen is cool. But the thing about AT&T that makes it so amazing, and you kind of don't realize it until you go to some other stadiums, is that everything in AT&T is finished. As in, there's not really any exposed concrete anywhere, for the most part. They found a way to make it look prettier and more some of the parts have like marble flooring, you know, not just the traditional concrete flooring.
Yeah, and they've talked about what was it, the tapestries or the artwork and everything else.
Right. In Mercedes-Benz, I mean, there is, if you're walking through the concourse, you feel like you're walking through any old football stadium. It's concrete.
Really?
And now the facades of the individual little concession stands and stuff are decorated up, but it's there's a lot of concrete. And I'm not saying that's good or bad or sounding, you know, I am sounding a little Dallas snobby here, but but as just far as the aesthetics, AT&T is still by far the most beautiful football stadium you'll ever go to.
Yeah.
Well, that being said, it's a pretty cool stadium.
Well, and it's over the top too. I mean, AT&T Stadium, everybody knows that it's ridiculously over the top. And yeah, you got concrete at Kyle Field too, but that's also ridiculously over the top in some places, namely the big time suites. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So you got to do that. Your big takeaway from SEC Media Days, I'll tell you what, I'll ask you this, I'll put you on the spot. If you had to give Jimbo a grade from A to F on his performance at SEC Media Days, what would you give him?
I think you have to give him an A.
Yeah.
Because I think coming into your first season, when you're one of the highest paid coaches in the country and you are one of the biggest storylines in the country, there's optimism abounds. This is something we talked about when we were on the radio the week before. Optimism abounds, and really, it's kind of one of the situations where you go into media days kind of with an A, and really all you can do is
go down.
If you start saying stupid stuff. He even tackled the Jameis Winston question and just basically said that he loves the kid. You know, he's probably made some pretty stupid decisions, but you know. He loves the kid and he's there for him. And that's about the best way you can answer that question, because it doesn't alienate the kid if the kid hears it, but it also doesn't alienate or doesn't sound like you're condoning any kind of action or anything like
right.
that. Or
even though Jameis Winston's not a kid anymore.
Right, right.
But, no, I understand what you're saying.
But I think you have to give him an A, because I think he stood up to everything, answered every question, took on day one and was the biggest storyline of day one.
And it kind of falls along with, I don't know if it was Paul Feinbaum or maybe Peter Burns, the SEC Network, it tweeted out that's kind of the grade that they were giving the coaches, and they gave Jimbo Fisher one of the better performances. Now, another question is, who had the worst? Because you were in the big room, you heard the coaches, every single one of them.
You know, here's the thing. It was a little bit, with how many new coaches there were this year, it was a little bit different, because there wasn't necessarily that huge, overwhelming elephant in the room press conference like Sumlin last year,
mm-hmm.
when everyone kind of knows, or Bielema last year, or you know, some of these coaches that were
Hugh Freeze.
Or Hugh Freeze last year, where there was these these elephant in the room questions and feelings, and you knew that they might tank it a little bit. It's a pretty new and fresh start for the SEC, not only in location, but in a lot of the coaches. And so it's kind of hard to rank that there would have been anybody who did anything out of the ordinary. From an A&M perspective, I know a lot of the A&M beat people were a little annoyed with the fact that Chad Morris wouldn't even say the words Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Now, I think Arkansas fans are probably pretty happy about that. But he even when asked directly, I think, about getting to play in that game, he just referred to it as that game in Arlington. So I think that I think he handled it well. I think he had a high grade too, but I think that that might be a little annoying from an A&M fan's side. I don't know if anybody really struggled all that much throughout media days.
And again, you're talking about little bitty things here and there, because nobody has lost any games. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of new head coaches. Nobody's lost games yet.
But Pruitt from Tennessee, and someone you probably should have asked, Ubin, some things came out about his demeanor in years past and being tough to work with.
Yeah.
And I think that might have came out after he took the stage. So it really wasn't have to do with his performance, but I think that was one of the bigger storylines and maybe deterred from his appearance. But I think that's about the only thing that you can really nail down on anybody.
And should have asked David this too, if Tennessee fans are starting to warm up to Jeremy Pruitt. I think they are. At least it seems that way. You don't have Tennessee volunteer Twitter going crazy. But that being said, he hasn't coached a game yet. So we'll see if he starts losing or if he starts winning, how they feel about him.
Definitely. I think the biggest storyline that I took out of it, especially from an A&M perspective, is it has to be what Jared Stidham had to say about his recruitment with Texas A&M on the final day when he was there, the Auburn quarterback who spent a season at Baylor, got some significant playing time as a freshman at Baylor when Seth Russell went down to an injury, their starter. And then after all the scandal and everything that happened at Baylor, decided to transfer out of Baylor. Instead of transferring into a school, he went to McLennan Community College and took classes there. Also worked out with a private instructor. And the most interesting part of it, got on with Waco Midway High School and Coach Jeff Hulme there and was their scout team quarterback for a season. So that's how he got his live reps in doing that. And actually, just diverting from that a second, in a story I wrote about him last year, the coach there said he didn't tell the players who he was before he ran out there the first practice. And it just kind of made it seem like he was a high school kid that transferred in. And when they started seeing him zipping the ball around, they kind of immediately went, hey, this guy is... this guy's no high school kid.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said that he was very interested in A&M, and the way he said it was, he recruited himself to A&M probably more than A&M recruited him. He wanted to be able to go just down the street, transfer conferences, but go down the street. His family could come to games pretty easily. He said he had some family members who were Aggies, and so it would have been a great situation for him. He said Kevin Sumlin didn't barely talk to him. His only real contact was with former offensive coordinator Noel Mazzoni. And he was interested. He wanted to come to A&M, it seems like, but A&M wasn't interested. They had Kellen Mond coming in that recruiting class, who, of course, saw significant time last year. But I mean, kind of from now on, depending on how this whole thing shapes up, Kellen Mond and Jared Stidham will probably always be at least linked, kind of like a trade in the pro sports. On that's the guy that someone decided to go with, and we'll see how the two shape out.
Which that's going to happen. I don't know if that's necessarily fair for Kellen, but that is going to happen. And another thing I'm wondering too, if someone gets Stidham here, does he even keep his job? I don't know if that makes that big of a difference.
Man, Jared Stidham's good, and if you would have had a season with Jared Stidham with Christian Kirk, I mean, a big part of A&M's woes this year was the fact that the offense just stalled out through the middle of the season before Nick Starkel was able to get back in there. I think he wins them a couple of games, a couple extra games.
Which ones do you think?
Maybe the Mississippi games, the Mississippi State game, and he probably beats LSU.
Yeah, maybe so. You very well might make the argument that he beats Bama, because that was a 27-19 ball game.
Yeah.
The Aggies had been able to muster a little bit more offense. And that's all speculation. I'm not quite even sure. And then you could also say, well, he's not going to be playing for Auburn, so maybe
right.
the Aggies beat.
He definitely beat wins the bowl game.
Yeah.
If you go from a 7-6 season to a 9-4 season, I think Kevin Sumlin keeps his job, and you beat LSU. I think Kevin Sumlin keeps his job.
So that was more or less kind of the nail in the coffin for Kevin Sumlin, you think?
You could maybe draw that correlation. I mean, Jarrett Stidham is there's a reason he already has buzz for being a Heisman candidate. I mean, he was the only quarterback last year to beat both of the national championship winning teams. So
a very valid point of view,
yeah.
Travis.
So I think I think that was a pretty big big slip up from the Aggies if you could have had that kind of caliber guy in here for a couple of years. And if you look at it in the future and Nick Starkle ends up being the guy and Kellen Mond, you know, is behind him or transfers out or something like that, Starkle was still a redshirt freshman before last year. If you bring Stidham in here for 2 years, he also gets to train for 2 years under Jarrett Stidham, who is a very smart guy, a guy who is on the national stage. It would help. And then, yeah, he doesn't get to play for 4 years, but he gets some tutelage from a guy and gets to see how a guy does it instead of, like Jarrett Stidham, instead of being thrown in there from day one and kind of figuring it out for himself.
Well, maybe Kevin Sumlin's kicking himself, but he's kicking himself from Tucson. So, and he's got a pretty good quarterback down there, and Khalil Tate, who that came out as well, talking about he put publicly on Twitter that he did not want to be part of a triple option offense, just in case Arizona was flirting around with hiring Navy's head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
So an interesting take there, and he admitted to that too. He was asked about it. So. SEC Media Days, anything else that really popped out to you? Anything that stood out to you?
I mean, the Chad Moore stuff was pretty there. I'm not going to be able to say his name at all. Maybe I can pull it up here on the SEC Media Days app thing that they provided us. But the offensive lineman for Arkansas, who is from Denmark, was absolutely hilarious. And his name, as I'm looking for it now on somewhat live radio,
it's
Hjalte Froholt. Is that how you say it?
Hjalte. I think it's Hjalte Froholt.
Froholt. Man, that kid is hilarious. He was the most, at least of the ones I talked to, the most, there was no walls there in talking to him. He was just happy to be there, happy to talk football. He played for like an old man beer league in Denmark football before he came over here.
Interesting.
And was the youngest guy on the team and kind of learned football and just wanted to be in America. So he became an exchange student and ended up going to IMG Academy where Kellen Mond went down there and then got up into Arkansas. And man, he's funny. Someone asked him if he has instilled any of his Denmark culture on some of his teammates, and he said, well, in Denmark we like to go and drink beer, so yes I have. So,
and he's 21
he made sure to mention that before. But man, he was just happy to be there. He seems like a good dude. I put this out on Twitter. Someone asked him about some like Chad Morris isms because he has a lot of catchphrases and funny things he says. And he in his slight accent, he tried to do a Texas drawl, a Chad Morris impersonation, and it was pretty darn funny.
Didn't work out real well.
No, it was pretty good. But man, that kid that's a good story. He seems like a pretty good kid. Man, that Arkansas game, that's gonna be huge. And I know that sounds that's kind of an understatement, but you know, Chad Morris, Froholt said, he was asked about who Arkansas's rivals are, and he said, you know, I don't know, every game's big, everything's important, but you know, man, those A&M games have been closed. We got to beat A&M before. We're going to beat A&M. So, man, that game is going to be big.
No, I use that bite as well, and Arkansas is retooling with a new head coach and new talent as well. You know, a lot of folks are pegging them to finish last in the SEC West, but you never know. They might could be kind of shocking some
folks. And they always play up. I mean, that is, we've spent a lot of time talking about who is A&M's rival, and I think A&M fans want Alabama and LSU and some of the more big name teams to be there. But Arkansas is A&M's rival, at least as of now. That is a big game. It's always played hard. You have it at Jerry World every year. Now you have Chad Morris, the Aggie, the former student. You have John Chavis, the former A&M defensive coordinator, who kind of left in disgrace in some way. You know, was fired, and some people think that his ship has sailed in being one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. Man, that game is going to be huge. And I think that's a big storyline from SEC Media Days too.
No doubt. Oh, that's about all I got for today.
Yeah, I need to go. I'm all hopped up on bike endorphins. I'm all good to go. I drank some coffee.
Ready to roll, huh?
Ready to roll. So I'm going to go hop back on that bike and ride back to work.
Right off into the sunset.
Right off in the sunset. I've been trash talking Rich Kroom on Twitter.
Are y'all going to race?
I want to.
Through the Eagle parking
Actually,
lot?
I don't want to, because he has a road bike and I have a mountain bike, and so he'd probably just
smoke
me on his bike built for speed. Mine's built for power.
What if the course includes some off-road?
Some jumps?
Yeah.
You'll have some judges to do some trick scores?
Yeah.
Okay, X Games are going on right now, I think. So.
That's true.
Yeah, anyway. Well, that's the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll be back next week to... next week, we'll be leading right up into the opening of fall camp. In fact, I think next Wednesday is the day that players report.
First.
So we are in football season, Zach. We are in football. Also, before I let go, and I'm just doing this on the fly on the air, this is probably about our 2-year anniversary.
Oh.
Right? Because we started right after Media Days.
Did we?
2 years ago.
I'm going to have to look back and see, but yeah, maybe so.
So just for the record, just for posterity's sake, I'm going to go ahead and say that this might be our 2-year anniversary episode.
Oh, would you get me?
We'll go cuddle later.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks for joining. Thanks for listening. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll be back next week with plenty more football leading into that football season. So for Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. And if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do. Make sure you're sticking with me. Don't wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be, all that we can be.